Welcome to the deep dive. Today, you've really challenged us with a fascinating one. It's surprisingly controversial, too. Session 5 of the Council of Chalcedon, way back in 451 AD.
Right. A pivotal moment.
Exactly. So our mission today is kind of a forensic autopsy of this event. It's often painted as this moment of, you know, perfect Christian unity.
The official narrative, yeah.
But we're looking deeper. We want to uncover the, well, the procedural weirdness, things like imperial meddling, maybe manufactured outcomes, and also those really subtle but critical doctrinal shifts, like that infamous word change that ended up causing a massive split.
It's amazing how the council's own records, if you really scrutinize them, suggest something quite different from perfect harmony.
Okay, gloves on then for this autopsy. First piece of evidence, the council claims unanimous and uncontradicted writing for its definition of faith.
Yes, that's the official line.
But the very same records admit contentious opposition.
So, how does that work? Those seem, well, contradictory. That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Was that unanimity real, or was it manufactured?
Okay.
I mean, the minutes themselves show pretty direct imperial pressure. You've got emperors Marcian and Valentinian involved.
Right.
Bishops were basically told, look, you need to align with the emperor's belief, which was this thing called the ecthesis of the three.
A pre-approved creed.
Sort of, yeah. A predefined imperial stance. And get this. The final definition wasn't even written by the whole council.
Yeah.
No, it was a smaller group, an elite minority, really. Plus, you had bishops initially resisting any new definition.
They didn't want one at all?
Some didn't. And then suddenly, there were these intense demands for everyone to sign on immediately. It really feels like the outcome was kind of pushed through, predetermined.
Okay, now this is where it gets really interesting for me. That tiny, tiny linguistic point everyone argues about.
Hi.
The final text says Christ is confessed in two natures. But there's historical digging suggesting an earlier draft might have said of two natures. Ex duo versus on duo. What on earth is the big deal with one little word?
Oh, it was huge. That tiny preposition in versus of, that was the whole turning point.
Really?
Absolutely. In two natures. On duo, that phrasing strongly favored the viewpoint from Antioch and Rome. It emphasized that Christ's divine and human natures remain distinct, you know.
Okay.
But of two natures, ex duo, that was tied to the Alexandrian tradition, think Cyril, think Dioscorus. They emphasized the unity after the incarnation.
So the council choosing in.
It wasn't a compromise. It was a clear win for one side, the Antiochian and Roman side, over the Alexandrian school. And that set the stage for the big split.
Talk about things being imposed.
Mm-hmm.
What about Pope Leo's tone? It sounds like he was just accepted, like a done deal.
A fait accompli, exactly.
Bishops were shouting, Peter has spoken through Leo.
Mm-hmm.
But did they actually, you know, debate it properly in session 5?
Doesn't look like it. Not extensively. It seems it was just woven into the definition. A foundational text, yes, but assumed true rather than openly discussed right then and there.
Which seems like a procedural issue, right?
A pretty glaring one, and it connects directly to how they treated Dioscorus of Alexandria.
Ah, yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, his statement, I receive the take of two, the two I do not receive, you could argue that was perfectly orthodox within his own Cyrillian Alexandrian framework.
He was trying to avoid splitting Christ too much.
Exactly. He wanted to prevent Nestorianism, which over-separated the natures, but they condemned him.
And was he even allowed to defend himself properly? The sources suggest maybe not.
It seems not. The Roman legates flat out refused him a seat at one point. They declared him one to be judged.
Wow. So they stripped him of his authority right there.
Effectively, yes. He was silenced during the very session defining his alleged heresy. Meanwhile, other figures like Theodoret and Ibis, who'd previously been linked to Nestorian ideas...
They were brought back into the fold earlier.
They were rehabilitated in earlier sessions, yeah. It really does look like a double standard, doesn't it? Like, the verdict was in before the trial.
Yeah, it does.
And add to that picture the sheer fervor in the room. The minutes record bishops shouting again and again, demanding everyone subscribe immediately.
Like peer pressure.
Collective emotional pressure, absolutely. It doesn't sound like a calm, reasoned theological debate. More like rushing a vote, stifling any lingering dissent.
So we've done this deep dive, sifted through these 1,500-year-old records.
Yeah.
What's the takeaway for you listening now? Why does this ancient council matter today?
Well, I think this autopsy shows how historical narratives, even ones about unity, can be shaped. Shaped by power, by politics, not just pure theology.
Right.
Chalcedon is held up as this beacon of orthodoxy, but these procedural issues, these doctrinal choices, they actually cemented a massive division that lasts to this day.
It's a pretty stark reminder that unanimity isn't always what it seems. It can be constructed. And language. Wow. Yeah. Even tiny shifts like of versus in.
Monumental consequences.
Right.
Absolutely. Makes you think twice about proofreading, doesn't it? But seriously, it leaves us with a question, doesn't it? When you encounter information today, maybe you proclaim consensus. How often might that be hiding a messier, more politically charged reality just under the surface?